Hello and welcome to Fantasy Life Podcast, incoming QB prospects questions edition. I'm your host, Ian Hardage. It's a great day to be great. It's a great day to break down the big six incoming rookie quarterbacks with none other than Fantasy Life's finest, Chris Allen. Chris, we're talking college QBs, man. Let's go. Great day to be great.
It is a great day to be great. Although, I mean, we're down one of the trio. I know that I've been out, you know, the past like 2-3 weeks or whatever because I've been traveling. Now we've got Dwayne. He's, noodling on some high-tech secret stuff going on behind the scenes here at Fantasy Life. So, folks, if you're upset that you don't see a dude with better hair on the show today, just understand that he's doing like important things for Fantasy Life, and you'll see some of the tools and some of the things that he's putting together right now in the coming weeks. But no, always want to talk ball with you, Ian. So, I mean, let's get to it, brother. What we got going on?
Let's get to it. By the way, real quick, happy opening day. I do, you know, respect some other sports out there. And you know what? Back in the day before kids started throwing curveballs and putting my freaking teenage brain in a pretzel, I even enjoyed playing a little bit of baseball out there. So gotta love that. Go Tribe. Maybe this is the year. Let's not continue to be the most losing franchise in all professional sports. That'd be cool. But yeah, Chris, let's get after the football side of things. But question number one, what actually are realistic year one expectations for presumed number one overall pick, Caleb Williams? I mean, at this point, you can't really even find the draft odds for the number one overall pick. I want to say after the Bears went ahead and did trade Justin Fields, it was like briefly listed at minus 5,000, but at least the sports books I've been looking at, man, I cannot find anything. So Caleb Williams joined the Bears. And what makes it so interesting, Chris, is we don't usually see teams with the number one overall pick have this solid of an offensive environment. And I know, I saw how wrong the Bears did every single thing with Justin Fields. You know, okay, lame duck, Matt Nagy, head coach, he's gone. Now we don't even have anyone around him in 2022. Like, unironically, Equanimeous St. Brown and some of these dudes were his top wide receivers down the stretch. Only in 2023 did we finally start to get a read on Fields. In Caleb's case, we're not going to have those same excuses. We actually have a coaching staff that is now entering their third year. At least, you know, the head coach is entering his third year. I know we had some firings going on. DJ Moore and Keenan Allen. Hey, not saying it's the best 1-2 punch at wide receiver in the world, but it might very well be top three, you know, top five at a minimum, I think we can say. Improvements elsewhere. It's a pretty damn good situation, Chris. What do you think Caleb should be, you know, treated as, especially in redraft here ahead of 2024?
I would say at the very least, he should be considered in that like QB 15-ish range. I wouldn't put him as top 12, like right away. I do think that there's at least a chance that the Chicago Bears offense from a fantasy standpoint is going to improve. We saw a number of flashes like out of DJ Moore throughout the 2023 season. But it's just my hesitation is just because of the fragility of that particular offense. And the fragility being that, okay, we've got DJ Moore now in his second season in the Bears offense. Okay, great. Solid like wide receiver one, but does that continue with a new quarterback? Going from Justin Fields to Caleb Williams, assuming that's going to be the case. Obviously a quarterback upgrade, but do they have to like make some time in order to mesh together? Also, you mentioned Keenan Allen. Keenan Allen, for everything that he did like last season, of course he was right and giving the Chargers the finger when they asked him to take a pay cut and moves over to Chicago. But how many games did he miss last season? How many games has he missed over the past couple of seasons? And behind those two wide receivers who inarguably are like top 20 wide receivers in terms of efficiency, explosive play rate, whatever stat that you want to throw out there, behind them, what do we got? We got Velus Jones. Okay. Tyler Scott. Okay. That's pretty much all we got. So it's like, we got these two dudes and then Caleb Williams. And of course we got the tight ends. So I would say that I still put like Caleb Williams in that I want to draft him. You know, I want to have a decent amount of exposure to him, like in best ball drafts and so on and so forth. But it is like the nature of the game where it's, how much can we rely on like these pass catchers? When we do have the two solid pass catchers, which again, in theory, is the perfect ideal situation you want to evaluate a rookie quarterback. But from a fantasy standpoint, is he going to be that guy I'm going to want week in and week out? I might look at the guys that are just slightly ahead of him in the ranks and go and check those out over at fantasylife.com.
early underdog ADP, and I know it's freaking March. I still very much feel ridiculous referencing ADP, but it's the best we have right now. And he is, Chris, sitting right around that QB 15 mark, specifically QB 14. Right behind him, Trevor Lawrence, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, Jaden Daniels, who we'll talk about in a minute, Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, then Drake May. So I really think, I mean, Daniels and May should probably be a little bit closer to Williams. And we kind of have the dual threat rookie tier guys with upside that honestly won't be in as bad of offenses I think we're used to seeing right in front of these more stationary veteran signal callers. And just at that point in the draft, Chris, for most traditional one quarterback leagues, you probably already have your guy. You know, we're probably already taking someone in the top 10, top 12 to be leading the squad. So when it gets down to this range, man, yeah, I'll throw the dart at the higher upside dual threat guy over someone like Kirk Cousins, Matthew Stafford, who, yeah, I get it. They have their pass to get in the top 12, but really it would be surprised if we see any of those guys have a chance to be, you know, breaking into the top five heights that we know Caleb could be getting there. So again, maybe, you know, you go pure late round QB. In that case, I do think of Stafford. You know, dogs, no, man. We want some Caleb Williams here in the later rounds. So I understand different builds, different draft types and stuff is going to be having, you know, different ideology there. But overall, man, I think it's really setting up as a sweet spot here. So, you know, you said it, don't want to go too crazy. I do think the top 12 quarterbacks, you know, recently as rookies, we've only had over the last 10 years, Justin Herbert finished as a QB7 as a rookie. Stroud got QB8 last year. Dak Prescott got QB9 and Kyler got QB11. So that's it, Chris. You know, if we want to go back a couple more years, we get Andrew Luck, RG3, and Russell Wilson in there as well. But it seems like the two main similarities is the presence of a rushing floor. And starting from day one, at a minimum, we definitely know Caleb has those two things.
I mean, and that's, I think, exactly the upside that he brings, not just for Keenan Allen and DJ Moore, but even for himself. If we're looking at like how Shane Waldron, like who's now the OC, like over in Chicago, has operated, like we've seen him be like the more like past friendly, like type of offenses. Past three seasons when he was the OC over in Seattle, 3%, 9%, 11%, like drop back over expectation rates, which you can go ahead and check out over on fantasylife.com utilization report by some dude over that works at Fantasy Life with excellent hair. But that's the thing that we should be at least more concerned about. I know that people will try and take a look at the Bears offense from 2022, even 2021 with Fields in it, and just like, oh, well, they're just bringing in a better quarterback. I mean, Caleb Williams better than Justin Fields, like blah, 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 blah. But what's the stylistic change like going to be for the offense now that Caleb Williams is going to be there, like along with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore? So if we are going to see like more of a pass friendly type of offense, we are going to see like more dropbacks. If we can expect some level of like increased efficiency with which Caleb was able to show both as a like just a typical pocket passer, but even be able to create out of structure. I mean, that is where we should at least be able to have a solid floor like for Caleb. Yeah. And that's where I think the QB 15 ranking I think is absolutely perfect for where he sits right now. But the ceiling for him, fringe top 12, especially if you throw in a few scrambles here and there, which he was capable of doing. We saw that when he was still at USC. I think all of that like kind of speaks to I think the right cost for Caleb Williams, but I think as much with the potential for upside, which we know that he's capable of doing, especially with those two guys like as his wide receivers.
Just speaking to Caleb Moore as a prospect, I know there's been, I think, some misconceptions out there. So I want to hit on a couple of those things. Yeah, I've watched the 23 Notre Dame tape. You know what, though? He's played a few more games than that, Chris. And when I actually talked to a couple of my Chicago friends who happen to be diehard Notre Dame fans, like, I thought they were going to, you know, dance all over the dude's grave. But their first thing was like, yeah, go back and watch the 22 game. And it was one of the most spectacular performances that we've ever seen a quarterback have. So different levels in the defense, I get it. But man, it really was night and day watching this, you know, 22 UFC offense versus 23. The defense constantly put them behind the eight ball. They gave up 28 plus points in 10 different games out there. Look, I'm not saying that Lincoln Riley, you know, isn't a great offensive mastermind stuff, but really seemed like a lot of these plays was snap the ball to Caleb and go ahead and make something happen out there. Losing Jordan Addison didn't seem to help. Maybe Brendan Rice, Jerry's son, is going to, you know, show a different level at the NFL. But watching that 23 Notre Dame game, I consistently saw, okay, one or two, you know, you don't throw three interceptions in the first half without making a bad mistake or two. He wasn't perfect by any stretch, but constant pressure, covered up receivers. It was not a winning situation. And I think when you go through more games, such as the Washington shootout, even those Oregon games, I understand that the losses were there for him, but I just think, again, and going through it and seeing him lose these, you know, one shootout after another, very tough to place all that blame on Caleb Williams. The running, Chris, another thing where, again, I think if you just aren't really all attuned to it, you can look at Caleb and say, oh, 3.3 career yards per carry, this guy even a dual threat. Remember, in college, we unfortunately have the sacks taken away from the rushing yards. So if you do go ahead and make that difference, we're talking about a guy in 2022, 624 rushing yards, 10 touchdowns on 6.6 yards per carry. Last year, just 356 in a few less games, but still 11 touchdowns, 4.8 yards per carry. I do think that even if he's not going to be a Lamar Jackson or a Justin Fields level threat on the ground, we could see Caleb from day one provide some legit top 10 rushing production at the quarterback position, which is a hell of a floor to associate again with those top tier pass game options you mentioned. So, Chris, last thing I want to go over is this newfound pressure to sack ratio. It's becoming this year's like S2 test in terms of people are just kind of letting this one number kind of really just divide them and overly like shift their opinion on a quarterback. Yes, Caleb's isn't completely ideal. I get it. When you pull up the list of comps, which I'm looking at right now, shout out to FB_insights for this. You'll see, you know, just some of the worst quarterbacks in recent history of coming out. Caleb Williams, Spencer Rattler, Zach Wilson, Joe Burrow, Justin Fields, Desmond Ridder, Jaden Daniels, Will Levis, Sam Howell, Hendon Hooker. Those are your bad ones. That's not a great comp list. I get it. That said, Chris, you as our resident Cincinnati Bengals fan, I'm sure you remember the interview where Burrow was actually being asked about, you know, taking 7 sacks in the Super Bowl. And Burrow, you know, kind of let the guy ask the question. And then he said, you know, the thing about sacks is how many of those actually came on third downs when it really wasn't changing anything. Because Burrow's point was, okay, yeah, if you are in field goal range, like you can't take a 15-yard sack on third down and lose that. But otherwise, he's going to hold that ball as long as possible because the next play is going to be a punt anyway. Or if you're on the 10-yard line, you know, you're not messing up that position. So I went ahead, used some of the handy-dandy tools that PFF offers and looked. And sure enough, Caleb Williams, man, it's 16.1% pressure to sack rate on first and second downs. And then it goes up to 24.7% on third downs. That was the biggest discrepancy between any of these quarterbacks between first and second downs and the money down. So his time to throw is a full, you know, 0.34 seconds longer on third down compared to what we saw on first and second downs. Like when we watch Caleb, Chris, there is a bit of that playmaking mentality, and I don't want to ignore that as a potential risk. That is, you know, one of Justin Fields' biggest issues. Bears fans are, you know, well accustomed to seeing that. But if we had to add some context to it, wouldn't it be what I'm just going over, the difference between the first and second downs and the third downs, and also the fact that this dude really did have to try to wear a Superman cape every single weekend because he wasn't exactly in the, you know, best example of a college offense that was making life easier for him.
And I think we see this across some of the other stats associated with Williams in his final season at USC. His adjusted completion rate, like when we're under pressure, I think it was 67, 68%, like in his 22 season, 23 season, it's down to like 61, 62%. And that's what I think gives some people some pause, like between those two metrics where it's like the high pressure to sack ratio, a drop off in terms of being able to create out of structure. But then it's like, well, let's look at the offense as a whole. Like once things changed from 22 to 23, you mentioned like you're losing a guy like Jordan Addison, who we've always seen it, who's, we saw in his rookie season being a legit baller, like for the Vikings. Of course, it's going to change things. Of course, it's going to change like how quarterbacks can actually progress through the reads and the level of trust that they have with their pass catchers. And so if that's going to be something that's going to be a knock against Caleb Williams, I can see it as being a general concern. But if you use the Joe Burrow like comp or like some of the other guys that you list on there, like a lot of those guys, like while it's hard to like, while the what's the phrase, like a tiger doesn't change their stripes, Burrow did like to a certain extent, because he did have that high sack rate like during his first couple of seasons. And then it was that third season when they won the Super Bowl run, it was a lot more short quick passes, and we saw like that his sack rate actually fall more in line with like the rest of the league. And can Caleb Williams do that like in a different structure with an OC that has been more progressive, which has been like Shane Waldron? Like, so I think all of those things, all of that to say that like while his play style like throughout college has been more of a guy that's going to be the, I wouldn't say big game hunter, but always looking to make plays like downfield, giving his pass catchers as much time as possible in order to create and like convert and move the chains. But can Shane Waldron allow him or like put the schematics in place so that he doesn't have to have like those like massive sacks or like and be able to escape pressure enough so that that number does come out, does come down his rookie season. And with guys like DJ Moore and Keenan Allen at his like at his disposal, I would say that it's more likely, in my mind, I think it's a bit more likely than not that we can see like those sack rates, the pressure to sack ratio start to fall more in line with the rest of the league in his first season than it being just like astronomically or even like, unfortunately, Justin Fields high like in his first season.
Look at that, Chris. 10 minutes-ish of us talking Caleb Williams without bringing up that he happens to like painting his nails in his spare time.
Oh, you know, man, don't even get me fucking started on that. Like, oh, come on. Like, all right, so can I rant on that for like
go for it, man. And just, yeah, before, okay. Before I'm going to let you go, Chris, like the fact that anyone does bring this up as a serious like flaw, like unironically, they're using their time on ESPN or wherever, it's just such a joke. Shame on whoever actually, whether it was the producer, whether it was the talent, actually bringing this up for some dude that's probably 20 years younger than you and has you've never met in your life and stuff. Give me a break. It's the biggest joke of this entire draft cycle so far.
I don't understand. Okay, so first off, let's contextualize like the entire thing, because that man was at a women's basketball game. It's not like the, you know, the whole thing was him sitting on his couch at home. It's not like he was like out and about at like a club. It's not like he was like sitting there on game day, like with the pink phone and the pink fingernails and all that. He was at a women's basketball game, folks. Like there's probably a reason why he happened to have that stuff on there, like at that particular game, because he was supporting the women that were playing the freaking game in front of him. Like, so why is this a thing? Like why? And you want to talk about, oh, he's going to go to Chicago. You know, that's a tough city. You need to be a man. And like, oh, okay. So what? Like so that means he's not going to be able to like lead like the rest of the team. He's incapable of like being the face of the franchise because of this. Oh, come on. Like get off of it, man. Like, I don't understand why we take something so like that has like zero to do with football, but then put that into football and say this is a reason why we have to knock a guy for it. Like, none of that stuff matters. If you win, that matters. If you're capable of showing the metrics or like the traits like for a winner, that's what matters. And I'm assuming that if the Bears wind up having more wins in 2024 than it did in 2023, nobody's gonna give a shit anyway. He could wear like rainbow colored nails for all I care. Like if they're winning, and especially for fantasy managers, if he's capable of putting up points and making DJ Moore still a wide receiver one, Keenan Allen still a wide receiver one, Cole Kmet. Well, we don't care about Cole Kmet, but like all the other guys, if he's capable of making them productive and making sure that the Bears win, nobody cares. So trying to make up stuff that like you think matters in March before he even gets drafted, you can miss me with all that stuff, man.
After football, UFC and MMA is just by far my favorite sports to watch and follow. Chuck Liddell, Yoel Romero, like some of the most badass fighters I've ever seen regularly paint their nails. Apparently, it's pretty damn good at keeping bacteria out. Who gives a shit? Watch the dude play football. Yeah, it's just, again, we probably even spent too much time on it. So final point, when I was going through, you know, I always try to watch, you know, five or six, at least just full games of these dudes on the All-22. I think the Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers comps, like you will see moments, especially, you know, when he's kind of getting off script, the certain arm angles, because he does do the side arm, you know, he'll jump and twist his body. Like, yeah, you see glimpses of it, but more than anything, Chris, I almost get like prime Russell Wilson vibes, maybe a little bit more arm talent. That's what I see. Mm-hmm. It's the escapability, extending the play, being able to, you know, the ball placement downfield, just unreal. Even some of the, you know, near miss touchdowns, ball was where it needed to be. Caleb Williams, my QB1 in Dynasty, in redraft, I am fully on board with thinking he is truly the next big thing. All right, question number two, guys. The basically consensus QB2 at this point, at least as far as the mock drafts go. So let's talk about him. Does Jaden Daniels have the archetype of the next great rookie quarterback in fantasy? Chris, when we look at Jaden, he is a little bit older of a prospect, and I do think that's important to remember when talking about this. Started his career at Arizona State, spent 3 seasons there, and then 2 seasons at LSU. So when we're comparing him against Caleb Williams and Drake May, I want to keep that in mind, because if Jaden Daniels came out after those Arizona State years, I don't think people would be as high on him. Now, that said, it's America, baby. It's legal for football players to get better as they get more experience and get older. So I'm not going to completely hold it against them, but just something to keep in mind again with all this. Age really does matter for prospects coming out. And again, that is something that, you know, Dwayne the supermodel, JJ Zacharyson, late round prospect guide, awesome shout out. You know, we see this across all aspects of just kind of incoming rookie evaluation. So with Daniels, Chris, what's so appealing though is the sky high rushing production. We're talking about a guy that averaged 13.8 fantasy points per game from purely rushing production during his final two seasons at LSU. Not the highest we've ever seen. Lamar was literally over 20 at Louisville. I mean, those numbers were absolutely out of this world, man. But again, mentioned it before, from Herbert to Kyler to Dak and just Russ, Andrew Luck, RG3, the most successful rookie quarterbacks, especially in fantasy in the past, have been the guys that can run the football. And Jaden Daniels, from what we can see, man, does it pretty much better than anyone else coming in.
So the one thing that I keep thinking about, like when it comes to Jaden Daniels rushing, go and search, who is it? It's DK, Danny Kelly, like over at the Ringer. He puts out like a compilation of Jaden Daniels rushing, and the comparison that Nate Tice from The Athletic gave was he's got some Johnny Knoxville to his game. So and the clips that they have of him just getting literally suplexed on some of his rushing attempts, that's the only concern. Is that at, what is he like, maybe 210, like something like that?
He got up a little bit more at his pro day, but you know, JJ McCarthy put on 20 pounds. I'm not so sure he didn't have just some
those dudes were probably either like, you know, drinking a shit ton of water or like hanging out at Chipotle like for quite some time beforehand. But let's say he bulked up a little bit, but like either way, it's just like relative to the other guys in this class who probably are like probably 5 to 10 pounds heavier than Jaden Daniels. Yeah. I'm assuming that's my concern. So when you say like he's the best like rookie quarterback archetype, absolutely. But do I want, like, if I'm thinking about it from a dynasty perspective, am I still hoping that he's going to play like this reckless in this way 2 to 3 years like down the line? Probably not. Just if he's going to continue to get just like manhandled by all the rest of the defenders in the league. But your point is well taken. Like his last season, at LSU, 529 rushing yards, which that is almost more than the like aggregate total of the other five quarterbacks like out of this class. I think it in total, the other quarterbacks from this class were just over 600 rushing yards, because like, you know, Caleb Williams like only had like maybe like a buck 50. I think like Drake May had like, you know, 170. We'll get to him later. But like on his own, like Jaden had like just over 500. And like his, like, so all of his like rushing numbers, like the metrics, like his scrambling rate, like all of it sticks out. I mean, just 13.5% scramble rate, like his final season, like the average was like less than 10%, like for the rest of the guys. Like forced missed tackle rate. I mean, he was over like 72%, like in terms of his forced missed tackle rate. So it's like all the other stats, like you almost look at him. And if you're just like kind of looking through and just like, am I looking at a running back? Like, like what position am I actually looking at? But I think overall, your point is well taken that if we're going to continue to adhere to like the Konami code, like shout out to Lord Reeves, and this is how, like, you know, with the way that fantasy scoring is broken, like and tilted towards quarterbacks and the rushing and the mobility, then Daniels has to be up there in terms of how we would want to evaluate this class, like the type of investment we would want to make. But like I said beforehand, the only concern is if he's going to continue to play like this style for his rookie season. Cool. Fine. If the Commanders want to take him at 2 or whatever, and he's throwing bombs to Dotson and Terry, and like he's like, you know, running a few in, okay, fine. But in year 2, 3, let's see if they can kind of settle him down. The coaching staff like works with him. They beef up that offensive line a little bit so that maybe his highlights from his rookie season are just like maybe might get pummeled a little bit, but then in year 2, it's just more of a controlled style. And that we won't have as many concerns about the longevity he can potentially have as a dynasty asset, like on our rosters.
Couple comps I came up with Daniels after, again, you know, getting through 5 or 6 of his games, in addition to what I've seen, you know, highlights and just other stuff over the years. I'm not making the Lamar Jackson one. I can see why people would go there, Chris. Again, like we got him tracked, not GPS. I had a coach point this out to me. It's not the next gen stats time. There's a different mile per hour read that you'll see a lot in college where they're actually judging what they're seeing on the film. So it could be sped up. It might not be in high def enough. But that said, Their measure, he came in at 21.8 miles per hour, and that is faster than anything Lamar or Justin Fields have done since 2020. And you see it, like that Florida game, when he gets going in the open field, gone. Breaks that first line of contain, he's gone. Like he has, you know, that as Gus Johnson would put it, like the getting away from the cop speed, you know, once he gets in the open field. But again, I don't think the creativity as a passer is anywhere close to what we see from Lamar. So my comps, Derek Carr with wheels. Yeah, it is possible to comp a black quarterback to a white quarterback. You know, it is, you know, 2024, guys. We can do that. Prime Tyrod Taylor and then Marcus Mariota with the better deep ball. And also just a Mentos and Diet Coke rocket. You know, as we said, the Johnny Knoxville thing. That is there and present in his game, Chris. But at the end of the day, like when we look at him just being so lethal on the ground, I don't think we're looking at Malik Willis' situation because he's doing it against the best freaking defenses in college football. Look at his last four games. Alabama, $163 and a touchdown on the ground. Florida, $234 and two touchdowns on the ground on 12 carries. Georgia State, whatever. A&M, $120 and 11 carries. Like, it's just time and time again, the dude was out there showing out. He won the Heisman Trophy for a reason last year. And at a minimum, I just think his skill set is going to transition so nicely at the next level. But you're spot on with your first point. Like, this isn't a Cam Newton or Josh Allen frame. Please, Jaden, take a little bit better care of your body. Because those plays, man, like the ones that are referenced, you know, getting hit stick against Ole Miss, you know, diving up the middle against Florida State, trying to hurdle like nobody. They're like in the first quarter with like not non-consequential moments. Like, you know, there's a time to be John Elway, you know, third down the Super Bowl, you know, helicoptering your way for that first down. Those are not them. So hopefully improves that. It's not an RG3 situation where he's like physically incapable of sliding. Just please, man, be a little bit safer out there. So only other thing I want to bring up is I think the main con with him, I know a lot of people, because you look at his overall percentage of passes and what were deep, what were short, and what were intermediate. And many have pointed out that Daniels throws over the middle of the field in the intermediate area less than pretty much any other quarterback out there this year. But he was still pretty damn good at doing it. I did find, you know, over 2 minutes worth of clips over these past two seasons of him throwing these nice timing-based routes into tight windows. Yes, it's a little bit tough to completely, you know, figure out what's going on with him. How much of that is Jaden Daniels? How much of that is a badass offensive line with two first-round wide receivers around him as well? So we do have to keep that in mind. But to me, Chris, like watching again five or six of his games, I thought the biggest issue was I was just shocked to see the lack of kind of this off-script goodness with the ball still in his hands as a passer. To me, when Jaden Daniels does, you know, get through his progressions, which he's really good at, like you wouldn't expect this dude who is so athletic to be such kind of a willing pocket passer to go, you know, from read one, read two, read three. But it seems like once he kind of gets through his reads and if his guys are covered, that's when he takes off. And it's something Nate Tice has pointed out. Colt McCoy and Josh Norris did a great breakdown on it where Colt McCoy was like, look, this is a covered play. He picks up 8 yards. That's awesome. A lot of guys aren't picking up those 8 yards. But if he kept his eyes downfield, might have had that 20-yard gain if he had, again, just stayed with those eyes downfield, looking to be a bit more of a passer. So for me, it's more of the off-script passing, and I'm just a little bit concerned about his ability at the next level to run away from defenders with the same, you know, sort of success that he had at LSU. So I know, guys, I saw the rollout, you know, scramble drill against Army, and then he hits Brian Thomas down the sideline. That was cool, and it's kind of like, you know, some of my middle-of-the-field highlights. I understand we need to, you know, have the quantity, the denominator side of things here going on as well, but I just want to point that out because to me, watching him, yeah, guess what? The slot fades to, you know, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr. They're there all day. This was the number one scoring offense in college football. So it's not like the, you know, reluctance to throw over the middle of the field was holding them back. So it's not, you know, it's not can he not do it? It's like, will he or will he not do it? So just wanted to get that off my chest because, again, I thought that was one of the big things.
No, I'm with you. I'm absolutely with you on that because we were talking, you mentioned like Russell Wilson like earlier, and I'm almost seeing like that could be that is a potential career arc for him where it's, we see the, you know, pirouette, like out of pressure, escaping out of the pocket, like running for 8-10 yards or whatever, being able to create downfield. I think for his final season, he had like either the first or second highest average depth of target, like for the passers in this class, with the top six guys. But then also had one of like the like third or fourth highest like adjusted completion percentage. So he's a big game hunter, and that's okay as long as he's been able to hit some of those like deeper passes, and he has the accuracy to do that. But will he continue to be able to like refine his game to the point where, as he gets older and he's incapable of running away from second level defenders, safeties, and whatever. Like, does he still have like the arm talent? Is that always going to be there? And I think it was like Nick Baumgartner from The Athletic did some charting for his final season. And to your point, I think he had like the fourth lowest average rate of passes across the middle of the field. The average for this class for the top six guys was around like 59, 60%, somewhere in there. And he was sitting at like low 58%, like something like that. But his EPA per play across the middle of the field was second highest. So like he can do it. And when he does do it, like he was able to hit his receivers in stride, like at least put the ball placement in a place where his receivers are able to create after the catch. So if he does do it, like, and if he can be put in a system with good receivers, which if he goes to Commanders, it's actually a pretty solid situation to have there. We could see that type of change for him start to happen where he's less reliant on the deep ball. I mean, use it if you need to, smoke him if you got him, I'm with you. But if he can now have like that, this other tool in his bag, along with the explosive rushing, along with being able to hit, create explosives downfield. But if he can now start to incorporate that a bit more in his first season, then hey, like now that's what we need to see out of Jayden Daniels in his rookie season.
So again, pressure to sack rate, which we don't discuss with Caleb as being a slight problem. It's definitely the biggest problem for Jayden. But again, I think it's just trying to keep the eyes up and just continue to develop. Because yes, he is older, but he's still only a 23-year-old kid. We're not talking about Brandon Weeden coming out or anything like that at this point. So again, I'm less concerned with the middle of the field stuff. I'm more concerned with just him really turning into this read, I am running. 48% of his pressure dropbacks ultimately resulted only 48%, I should say, of his pressure dropbacks resulted in an eventual pass attempt, 144th among 147 qualified quarterbacks last year. So, again, we'll see if he can improve. But you said it, man, in kind of in passing there. Washington, not a bad situation. Chicago, not a bad situation. We got the Vikings, you know, talking about trading up. Just, you know, for the love of God, if you guys have done your rookie drafts, you're just praying that whoever you took is not going to hear that New England Patriots team call out their name. So, hey, and even them, you know, good amount of draft capital. I don't expect them to be terrible for next decade or anything like that. But, yeah, out of all these possible landing spots, Patriots is certainly the one that not going to be ideal for whoever ends up getting it. Takes us to our third of the big three quarterbacks out there, North Carolina signal caller Drake May. And question number three now, why is Drake May, Chris, being drafted as a distant third among the top three QBs? Because when we look at it again over at Underdog, Caleb Williams right now, pick 110, QB 14, Jayden Daniels pick 131, QB 18, and there's Drake May at QB 21, pick 149. So again, if we knew and if we're feeling really confident that May is for sure going to the Patriots, yeah, I think that probably should be where it settles. But I don't know, Chris, the way some of these mocks and, you know, some of the murmurs are going, I think you could argue that May probably has a reasonable enough chance of going to Vikings as JJ McCarthy does. So obviously, if we get him in Minnesota, I think we're going to see him arguably going up against Caleb, you know, in that kind of top 15 range. Any reason why you think Drake May specifically is being kind of outcast as far as these top three QBs go?
I'm gonna put this is gonna be my like tinfoil hat, like for purposes of you know us you know kicking it here. But I'm thinking that this is a smokescreen, because I don't know how you could look at what this is like fantasy guy in bio, hate me, I don't know ball or whatever. Like, I'll just go ahead and get that out the way. But I don't know how a GM could sit there and look at like the concerns with Jayden Daniels that we were just talking about. Like, he's got the arm talent, like, for sure, but just, like, the rushing style. Will he continue to be, like, this explosive of a passer, like, not in just year one, but in years two, three, four, and then also when they have to talk extension, like, after you get to the end of year four, is he a guy that you're going to want to invest in? Because if the Ravens just had to do the same bullshit with Lamar Jackson, what are they going to do with Jayden Daniels, like, you know, 4 years down the road? So I'm assuming teams have to be thinking in this manner. So if you got Jayden Daniels, but then if you look at Drake May, what, 230 pounds, also has like similar rushing talent, arm strength is like the ball just like flies out of his hand. Sure. So I'm thinking it's a smokescreen. I'm thinking it's a, hey, we're thinking about Jayden Daniels. What about Jayden Daniels? Hey, everybody, like, what do you think about Jayden Daniels? Like, when the real person that they want is Drake May. That's how I'm thinking about it, because we've heard like very little about Caleb Williams, because everybody just thinks it's just a foregone conclusion that Caleb Williams is going to go to Chicago. But like, all the smoke has been around JJ McCarthy. All the smoke has been around like Jane Daniels. And then I'm for sure, after this this 40 time for Michael Penix starts to make the rounds for the national media, we're going to start to get some Michael Penix smoke after he ran this 4.46 at his pro day. So like, that's what I'm thinking it is, because looking at his metrics, watching the dude on film, I can't see a reason why you would just have like such a large gap. If the order is Williams, Daniels, May, I get it. But from the way that I'm hearing it right now, it's just Williams, Daniels, and then May, like, you know, almost like a teardrop, and then you get to May. That doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm thinking it's more of a smoke screen, and teams are just tossing out names, putting stuff out there in order to say like, hey, you know, what about this Daniels guy? You know, we're thinking Daniels when really it's probably going to be, and I don't want to use, well, we're not even close to May, so it doesn't matter, but it's going to be May.
I wholeheartedly agree with the idea that May is closer to QB1 than he is to QB3. I'm with you. Pure fantasy, we've mentioned the rushing production. We know how much of a cheat code it is. Again, Taysom fucking Hill was a legit recommended QB1 for stretches because we just knew he was going to run the football. Like, it's not that complicated. It's the biggest hole in our game. I think sacks should probably be a negative point for quarterbacks. That would help rectify it. Regardless, Drake May can run the football, man. I mentioned the stat before. Jaden Daniels, 13.8 fantasy points per game over these past two seasons from only rushing. And second, though, is Drake May with 9.4. Like, Caleb's right up there at 8.6. But that 9.4 mark, Justin Fields was at 9.6 at Ohio State. Anthony Richardson was at 10.4 at Florida. Like, I'm not trying to say May is those guys athletically, but there's a lot to like here, man. So, again, it's so funny with these comps, Chris. I like having fun with them, and I'm not trying to, you know, do the mainstream shit. And I can see where people are coming from with each of these, but you'll see people comp Caleb Williams to Mahomes, and then Jaden Daniels to Lamar Jackson, and then Drake May to Josh Allen. It's like, oh, okay, so we're just getting literally the three best quarterbacks in the NFL are also coming out again in 2024. What are the odds with that? So you can see him, but again, I think it's that part of Drake May, because if you haven't watched him, you might mistake him as more of like, oh, like he must be, you know, the more traditional drop back passer of the group, and he can do it like from the pocket. Like, he can absolutely win. I think that's why NFL teams should be feeling a little bit better about him versus, you know, someone like Jaden Daniels, even though they do have a few similar concerns there. But my five comps for Drake May: Justin Herbert, but if he shotgunned a 2 liter of Mountain Dew before kickoff, target version of Josh Allen. I didn't go all the way down to Walmart, but we're also not dealing with Whole Foods or anything like that. The good version of Carson Wentz, Ryan Tannehill on crack, and then faster Jay Cutler. Those were the five comps I had going with Drake May. So even if you don't think those are necessarily worthy of second overall, if we had those out there, like, a faster Jay Cutler is a top 15, top 12 NFL quarterback, man. So again, a lot to like with Drake May. Honestly, he just needs to rein things in a little bit. Like, the decision-making, as much as I understand why, because some of the same things, excuses, if you want to call them that, that I say with Caleb Williams, like, over these past handful of seasons, USC and Caleb Williams, he had 18 games where the defense gave up 28 or more points. Drake May had 17. JJ McCarthy had one. You know, we got to try to add these contexts when trying to evaluate why these guys are making some decisions that they are. So when you watch Drake May, I mean, the left-handed touchdown, he had another like read option play where he's falling to the ground. He finds a way to pitch it back to his running back. You'll see an ill-advised hurdle out of nowhere out there. Like, that's, I think, where some of the Josh Allen stuff comes from. And when you see some of the throws he pulls off, you know, out of the pocket, rolling to his left, rolling to his right, it's easier for me to excuse some of the bad mistakes because they're happening in a shootout, and they're happening with a guy that at least does prove on other occasions capable of making those things happening. So kind of like Caleb as well, you take Josh Downs, Antoine Green out of this offense. Definitely think the North Carolina group, you know, in 2023 wasn't anything that we should have been expecting all that much out of. I did try to quantify that, Chris. You know, it's not the perfect supporting cast metric, but you can take PFF's rushing, receiving, pass blocking, run blocking grades, everything other than passing. And I just did this for the marquee, you know, six schools we're talking about. Number one, best supporting cast, Oregon. Number two, LSU.
Washington comes in at number 5. Michigan's 12. USC's 15. This is just out of 65 Power 5 schools. North Carolina's down there at 31. So, hey, not saying he was completely surrounded by scrubs. North Carolina's a good football program. But I think it's lazy just to look here and be like, oh, Mitch Trubisky and Sam Howell busted, when Drake May is a completely different type of quarterback who's 21 freaking years old, Chris. So, to me, again, based on everything we just said about Daniels and May, if you remove the age element, I think you can make a more realistic conversation point that, okay, Jaden Daniels is, you know, the superior prospect to May. But when you look at, okay, who's going to be better by 2026? You know, if May spent two extra years in college, could he fix some of these decision-making problems and the correctable mechanics that some people think he has an issue with? I think the answer is yes. And at a minimum, if I'm wrong, like, I'm sure as hell going to, if it's that close, man, just give me the quarterback prospect who's 2 years younger.
Yeah, and that's why I think for our purposes, for fantasy purposes, sending May to the Commanders at 2 makes all the sense in the world, because you already have at least that built-in floor of him getting both Terry McLaurin and Jahan Dotson, like, just right out of the rip, and then a strong, like a legitimate, I'll just say a solid rushing duo with Chris Rodriguez and Brian Robinson. Like, you can't
Eckler there now, baby.
And Eckler too. So it's like, you've got all the pieces in place where if you just drop a quarterback, where if your primary concern with him is going to be accuracy, okay, fine. Then you can evaluate that and try and at least provide whatever, whatever coaching like is required in order to build him up. And you have the pieces around him in order to make sure, like, okay, is this going to be the guy? Because that's what you want. That's why we were talking about with Caleb Williams earlier. It's like, if Chicago wants to know if he's going to be the dude or not, you invest in the supporting cast in order to make sure that happens. So if that was a problem for May at North Carolina, now we get to completely switch things around and say, like, you've got two solid, like, pass catchers, like out on the outside. You've got a legitimate, like, rushing core, like, behind you, offensive line, work in progress. But, like, everything else is, like, set up so that if he has to scramble, he can scramble. It can scramble, like, 10% scramble rate in his final season. If he needs to, like, you know, like, uncork one, that's fine. His ADOT was actually the highest of the six. I think it was, like, just short of, like, 11 yards. So it's like all of that stuff is going to be there for him to still lean back on some of the crutches he had, like, throughout his collegiate campaign. And that's cool. But he also has the pieces around him in order to start developing him into a guy that, all right, if we want to squint and say that now he's going to be the next coming of Josh Allen in 2 to 3 years because his mechanics are better and Washington's passing more often and we're seeing, like, these, you know, huge leaps, like Terry McLaurin is now, like, the new Stephon Diggs and, like, whatever. Like, okay, you can make that leap in a couple of years, but at least starting off, like, right now, and the concerns you might have about Drake May, I think his concerns and where Washington is at the moment fit, like, just much more seamlessly with May than it would be for Jaden Daniels.
Sounds like you're on the same page with me, where QB2 definitely in Dynasty. I can understand Daniels ahead of redraft this year, but it's Keith and Drake May.
Yeah, if you want ceiling, right now, I would say Daniels just because of the rushing. I mean, there's, like, it's very hard for us to get past that portion just because the way, like, fantasy scoring works. But if I'm just thinking about just more, like, just trying to be as reasonable and, I guess, just pragmatic about the situation as possible, I would just say, like, Drake May and just set it, forget it, and just, like, to go ahead and draft, like, May over Daniels.
Three more quarterbacks we still want to talk about, everyone. But first, I want to give a shout-out to our lovely sponsor over at DraftKings, because the biggest tournament in college basketball is underway and the action is just getting started. Sadly, you know, we're not talking about the NIT. My Buckeyes got bounced by the freaking Georgia Bulldogs last Tuesday. I was there. I am so tired of seeing us lose that damn team. But on a more positive note, we have, again, teamed up with DraftKings Sportsbook for the tournament. And right now, new customers who bet just $5 on anything will score $150 in bonus bets instantly. Download a DraftKings app now and sign up using our promo code QUESTIONS. The crown is yours. And again, everyone, that's right. New customers can bet just $5 on anything and receive $150 in bonus bets instantly. Stay in on the action. Use your $150 in bonus bets on DraftKings same game parlays for a shot at an even bigger payout. I know I was getting in on some of the MLB action today. I feel like two or more total bases. That's like my reasonable. That's like my anytime touchdown for these baseball players. Home runs, you know, it's kind of cold out. I don't know. 2+ total bases. My guy, Jose Ramirez, going to get me to the promised land there. So again, remember, you can combine multiple bets together from the same game, including total points scored, number of rebounds by your favorite player, and more. Who is that dude, Chris, that he freaking took down? This is one of my complete lack of college basketball shows. He's only attempted like two-point attempts all season, just like the most three-point how. Golkey, right? Yeah, that dude. Imagine if you, a scholar, have just been pounding his, you know, over three-point attempts each and every week out. That's what you can do over at DraftKings Sportsbook. So, hey, if sports betting is not yet available in your state, don't worry. You can still join in on all the fun with DraftKings Daily Fantasy and have a shot to win cash prizes. Again, download a DraftKings Sportsbook app now. New customers use our promo code QUESTIONS and bet just $5 on any wager to get $150 in bonus bets back instantly. That's promo code QUESTIONS only at DraftKings Sportsbook. All right, guys, I know we took quite a bit of time on the big three quarterbacks, but for good reason, as Chris and I will discuss, more likely than not that those are going to be the three quarterbacks that we're going to actively be wondering about, is it time to put in our starting fantasy lineups or not in at least the year 2024. That said, depending on the mock draft you want to look at, three other quarterbacks have at least a decent chance of going in round one, especially the next one we're going to talk about, who, depending on where you look, man, pick four, pick three. We have rumors of pick two for none other than Michigan quarterback JJ McCarthy. So Chris, it's time to ask, man, is it time to hop on the JJ McCarthy hype train? You know him better than anyone. Your fantastic profile is live and free over at fantasylife.com.
I don't want to do this. Like, why do we have to do this? Like every year, I feel like we're going to get like Will Levis, where it's just like, there's going to be so much smoke on this train and then everybody's going to hop on. And then like JJ McCarthy's going to be the one that's just sitting in that green room, like trying to look composed while his family's just kind of looking around like, you know, like what's going on? Like, I thought he was going to get drafted. Like, what's, you know, is he going up to the podium? Like what's going to happen? Like, I feel like that's what's going to wind up happening, because like we were talking earlier about Drake May, Jane Daniels, and just like the smoke around like specific quarterbacks. He's the one that's been getting all of the hype, like so far, like throughout the most of the combine process, since he was like one of the only guys that really like threw, like when everybody was like out in Indy.
Yeah.
But I guess like my concerns, and I put this in the profile, go and check it out, fantasylife.com. I get why everybody is enamored with him, because he can execute the system like as it was designed. He is like at least fairly accurate in like the short intermediate parts of the field, over the middle of the field, throwing efficient. It's just, I keep going back to, is he the guy that you would want if you're an NFL team and you want to push like deep into the playoffs? Is he the guy that you want? Is he the guy that is going to be the face of your franchise? Is he going to be the guy that, and which are like all intangible things, like all these are things that it's like you can't point to a specific statistic or a specific metric and say like, oh, he can't do this, he can't do that. It's just more based off of vibes. It is like, because if you go to like the championship game, how many dropbacks did he have like relative to the guy that was on the other side? How many how many dropbacks do you have relative to his own team? How often did Harbaugh like put the ball in the hands of JJ McCarthy? And it's like, I keep seeing more about Blake Corum. I keep seeing more about the rushing game. I keep hearing more or seeing more and like leaning towards it's a run first type of offense, in the same offense where it's like, now we're trying to hype this guy up into being like a top two, top three, like overall selection. That's where it just, something doesn't add up in my mind. And that's where like I've seen it. I've made the same comparison myself to, this guy is just Kirk Cousins, which is not bad.
Really good.
that can be good. Like especially for fantasy purposes, yeah, that can be great. But for an NFL team that has to make this selection with a potentially top 10 overall first round pick, is that the type of draft capital you would invest into a guy that's going to be Kirk Cousins? And I would say that that's something of an overpay. So I'm kind of out.
It's just the unknown factor, man. 6 career games with 30 or more pass attempts. May is 22. Caleb is 19. Daniels has 17. But McCarthy won that national championship and legally wasn't even allowed to drink yet. Like, he just turned 21 on January 22nd. So I think so much of this, and shout out to Underdogs, Hayden Winks. I'm trying to get him on the podcast here soon and hopefully discuss this very topic. But the way Hayden was describing it too, like, I think so much of it is just you're projecting what he could be in 2 years. Like, if any quarterback in this class, I think, could really benefit from getting that actual full first year off, I think it would be McCarthy. Because again, it's just a matter of like, okay, why did he not need to throw the football more? Because if he was awesome, wouldn't he just naturally be throwing the football more? And I would agree with it if we didn't have all this context that, you know, unfortunately, as an Ohio State fan, we have so much context that this Michigan team has been a bunch of world beaters and it was working time and time again. Dude went 27-1 as a starter. I'm not saying he should go fourth overall because of his college wins, but when we're like, okay, why didn't he throw more often? Well, they were winning. His defense gave up more than 28 points one time. And we're just in a situation where his head coach, Jim Harbaugh, also ran a run-first offense with Andrew freaking Luck under center. So, no, I don't think McCarthy is nearly as, you know, physically talented as Andrew Luck. But at the same time, allegedly, you know, based on some of these pro day times, every quarterback's running a sub-4.5, I guess, these days. But allegedly before 2023, McCarthy ran under a 4.5. This dude was a former five-star recruit who ended his high school career winning another championship at IMG freaking Academy in Florida. Like, you would think that the way people talk about this guy, it's some like Stetson Bennett, 24-year-old, like just along for the ride type of dude. If McCarthy wasn't at Michigan, man, I know Ohio State fans sure as hell wish we didn't take Honda McCord over, you know, McCarthy a couple years ago. So, like, again, it's so much the offensive style, and I know it's hard to parse through, but we have the context if we want to do it. So, I think you nailed it, though, with one of the first things you said, Chris. You can see why people are starting to be enamored by him, particularly the NFL scouts, because he's amazing on third downs. I mean, 10.9 yards per attempt, highest in the class on third and six or longer. You can see he has the mobility to scramble, usually to his right, but, you know, sometimes to his left as well. And it's just throwing over the middle of the field. Again, Hayden showed that just in terms of, like, crossers, digs, and some of this other stuff. All of a sudden, the volume's almost in McCarthy's favor because he was running more of a pro-style offense at Michigan. Whether it was the touchdown to Roman Wilson against Ohio State, where I still maintain Denzel Burke had that freaking football at the end. But regardless, it was a great throw by McCarthy. Just turn your head around. I'm having demons even bringing this guy up.
You're going to lose it.
In the natty, yeah, I don't know, only 18 pass attempts against Washington. Again, you start pulling some of them up, and you see at least a couple flashes a game, and he just obviously didn't have all that much volume to go ahead and do it over the course of a season. So yeah. I'm with you. More of a project. Guess how many passes he threw in the fourth quarter of the season, Chris?
Less than 10.
34, so still pretty freaking crazy. Only 110 in the second half as well. They're routinely up by a bunch in the fourth quarter, and again, they were winning. So overall, not seeing it in fantasy. I mean, I mentioned the stats before about just how much these guys are actually going out there and running, and it wasn't good. He can do it, like, even with some of the design stuff. I mean, it's not really a matter of can he or can't he run. He is fast, and if we are to believe he's up closer to 220 pounds, maybe this can improve it to the next level. But 4.2 fantasy points per game from just rushing over the years, I mean, that's less than even what Bo Nix was able to do. So overall, yeah. JJ McCarthy, I can see it working out long term, but for right now, Chris, I think he is definitely the QB4 in Dynasty, maybe even less in redraft, depending on where Bo Nix and Michael Penix land.
Yeah, and I like you nailed it, because it's just like, if you just looked at each individual stat, and everybody would just, if you took the name away from it, everybody would probably be like, ooh, I want to invest in this. Oh, 80% adjusted completion rate in his final season? Oh, give me some of that. Okay. Like, his sack rate, like, just around like 5%, like one of the, you know, middle of the class. Oh, okay. I dig that. I dig that. Highest like throw rate, like over the middle of the field. One of the higher, second highest efficiency, like efficiency on passes over the middle of the field. It's like, ooh, like, give me all of these things. It sounds like he's pro ready. And then you look at the number of dropbacks, and he has like less than 400 dropbacks, when every single other prospect in this class had 400 or more. So it's like, and then you look at that, and it's like, well, now what am I supposed to do with all his other things? Like, you gave me all this goodness. You gave me this high accuracy thrower, a guy that could, you know, pick apart the middle of the field, can just absolutely, you know, have linebackers and safeties in a blender potentially. And so now what am I supposed to do? And so, like, I'm at this point where it's, I really love the fit with him at, if he were to go to the Vikings, because that's been like the connection that everybody's made and all of that. And that's great. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, you know, TJ Hockenson, whenever he comes back from injury, like, you know, the pieces and like the parts and pieces are there. Solid offensive line, like the two tackles that they've got there. Excellent. So like the foundation is there. Same like we were talking about for Caleb Williams, fairly similar, assuming it's like either Drake May or Jaden Daniels that goes to Washington, like solid foundation to build on a rookie quarterback. But working with Kevin O'Connell, a guy that we know it comes from that Sean McVay like tree where we see like more passes and runs. Will that efficiency and will that accuracy still be there once the volume ticks up? Yeah. Because that's not linear. We can't just expect if a guy only throws, you know, 20 passes a game, but now we're going to ratchet it up to 30, that he's still going to have the same level of efficiency. Is that going to be there for him? Now, I get it with Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, the other side of your passes, that's entirely possible. But I guess the concern for me is, like, will that maintain? Like, if he does, if that pie does, like, get much bigger for a guy like him. So landing spot and how much time he's going to, and the runway he's going to get in order to develop is going to be crucial to me, because if it's going to be a team that is going to trade up and try and move up into the top four, now that, you know, Minnesota's kind of positioned themselves in order to be like, to at least potentially move up again and get into that top four, top five. Okay. That means that kind of signals that they wanted to start on day one. Okay. But I still have at least some concerns that it's going to be a little bit of growing pains, despite how easy a guy like Kevin O'Connell has made it for like incoming quarterbacks.
Was trying to find the, because again, I think we agree here, if you could go to Minnesota and sit behind Darnold feasibly for a year and just, you know, learn, grow out a little bit more, get that arm strength up a little bit, that'd be best case. But I was looking at it, it was going last year, it was something, Chris, like, I want to say 41 of 45 top 10 quarterbacks picked since 2010 ended up starting at least 10 games as a rookie. I mean, that's just how it goes, man. Yep. Darnold goes out there, if and when he goes out there in week one and tosses three picks, like, the cries from McCarthy are going to be immediate. Everyone's going to forget about this. You know, hey, it'd be great if we could have him sit on the bench for a year. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens. Again, I don't think it's going to be the cleanest, you know, progression in fantasy, but I could see here in a couple of years him climbing up the ranks. Watching him, the two comps that really stuck out to me, Chris, I don't hate the more athletic Kirk Cousins one. Similar vein, Alex Smith and Jake Plummer. Those were the two quarterbacks that I just really did see more out of McCarthy. He's got the mobility, pretty accurate when he is throwing the football. Yeah, is he going to be this top 10 world beater in real life or fantasy? I really doubt it, but, you know, in the wise words of, you know, the bus driver from Billy Madison, you could imagine. Question number five, is Oregon quarterback Bo Nix to number 12 at Denver? I kind of butchered that. Bo Nix at number 12 to Denver. Good or bad fantasy ramifications, Chris? Looking at Bo, obviously one of the elderly quarterbacks, started his career off at Auburn. I think if you guys are college football fans, you would be shocked based on what he put on tape during those first 3 years to see how far he's come and how far he's risen up, you know, just the overall rankings here. But again, we do have smart people, one such of them being Joel Klatt, you know, Fox's main color guy, saying that just when you watch Bo Nix, they equate him to, you know, the point guard who, you know, could be a nice fit in that Sean Payton level offense. So that's where I want to go here, Chris, specifically Denver, because there's only so many teams right now that actually still need a quarterback. So maybe Bo Nix ends up being this round two guy and he just goes to like Philly or some team that like clearly is not going to compete. Obviously at that point, we're not going to have very high fantasy expectations, but if Bo Nix lands on Denver, maybe even the Raiders or somewhere, gets that chance to start early, do you have high expectations for him specifically in fantasy land?
No, I don't have high expectations for Bo Nix. I would have like higher expectations for his pass catchers though, because at least for his time at Oregon, like Bo Nix had like one of the like lowest average depths of target, like for this entire class. Yeah. Everybody else was around like 9, 10, like 11 when I was talking about like Drake May in terms of like they're firing the ball downfield if they could. Bo Nix sat at like 6.8. So that might be okay for a guy like Sean Payton, who hasn't been too happy with the guys that he's had under center for the past couple of years. So maybe wanting to rein that in and taking some of the focus off of their aerial attack and making sure that guys like Javonte Williams are getting the rock. And like, that's how the offense flows through the rushing attack, which would be great for Javonte Williams stock, but then also but less so for the pass catchers. But I say all that, and now I'm going to talk out of the other side of my mouth, because it doesn't make any sense on the pass catchers that they've retained at this point, because Cortland Sutton's still there, and we know that he's not typically a guy that you're going to rely on for, like, while he can do like the over the middle, like over the middle of the field type stuff, the short area of the field things, okay, but that's really not how we've seen him win in the past. They get rid of Jerry Jeudy, the one guy that we thought could do that, and then they still have Marvin Mims on the roster, but then they also just signed Josh Reynolds, who has been more of the intermediate to deep threat. So that's where I think Bo Nix with Sean Payton, that pairing makes some sense to me, given how Sean Payton has, at least over the past couple of seasons, wanted to make the focus less on their quarterback, more on building in the trenches, having a solid running game, and then moving the ball like on the ground. Cool, cool, cool. But their wide receivers, that doesn't make a ton of sense to me in terms of how Bo Nix will be able to work with them, unless now it's just going to be more of a, I don't know, short passing a type of offense. Cortland Sutton like completely switches almost like archetypes at that point. And now that's how they start to move the ball, like from a passing standpoint. But overall, I think that's where like my general concern is. I think Bo Nix would be great in Denver, but it wouldn't be great for their wide receivers, maybe just their tight ends. And maybe then Adam Trautman could be like, you know, the guy that everybody wants to draft because, you know, go Dayton.
It's a particularly hard, you know, just transition to make, because everything you're talking about, again, okay, we have some guys. Maybe Marvin Mims does something. Maybe Cortland Sutton does something here. And, like, it's easy in hindsight to look at the Houston Texans wide receivers from last season and be like, oh, you know, we knew Tank Dell could have been something and Nico Collins flashed a little bit. Without the benefit of hindsight, though, Chris, I think we could rank this Denver Broncos pass-catching room as a bottom-five group in football and probably not get that much flack about it. I mentioned it before. In my supporting cast metric, Oregon had the single best one in all college football last season. And when you start watching some of these Oregon games, man, the amount of wide-open pass catchers and the big pockets, like, it's probably not a coincidence that when we did see Bo Nix looking at his most mortal, it was against, you know, Washington, some of the tougher defenses. Like, 3 points in four quarters against Georgia in 22. Not saying there was much there, man, but there really is, you know, if we want to criticize, you know, someone like Jaden Daniels for not being able to create as a passer too much off script, like, yeah, with Bo Nix, I think it's a concern as well. He has enough arm strength where if he's in rhythm and stuff and you got an open receiver, yeah, he can fling at 50, 60 yards and he can move around. He's not a stationary, you know, pocket passer or anything. He'll get hot, man. And honestly, like when he gets hot out there, I actually start to see like some here in my comps, and they're going to sound mean, but again, I'm not trying to comp every freaking quarterback to a current top five quarterback out here. If Bo Nix comes in as a late first round pick or second round pick and ends up being a top 30 quarterback on planet Earth, I don't think that's too bad. So what I came up with was Baker Mayfield with less arm talent, a homeless man's Tony Romo, Gardner Minshew without the flow, less dynamic Jalen Hurts, and post 2017 Carson Wentz. So yeah. If I was a GM, I'm probably not spending number 12 overall pick, but a lot of this, again, just comes down to the positional importance, and that's what drives most of these quarterbacks up in the first place as well. So, again, a lot of good things from Bo Nix, and it's similar to Daniels and our next guy we're going to talk about, where if you just looked at all these guys, Chris, you knew nothing else, and you just watched their 2023 film, people would be a lot higher on Bo Nix. But we got to remember, my man just turned 24. Bo Nix is only 142 days younger than Trevor Lawrence out here. So, yeah, when we start looking at can he improve in this and that, that's where the bigger questions are held. So, good stuff on Mr. Bo Nix. I'm going to have a full profile up on him over at fantasylife.com next week, so you'll be able to find a lot more cool stats in that once we get that live. But takes us to our sixth and final question, sponsored by DraftKings. Freaking love you guys. Again, make sure you use promo code QUESTIONS. $5 to get that $150 and, you know, anything you want to gamble on. So great day to be great there. Final question, Chris. Would Michael Penix Jr. to the Raiders be good news for the pass catchers? Pretty great timing, because apparently my man's is a dual threat quarterback, Chris. You can go through college and play 15 games. This is even more crazy. Last year, even including sacks, but he didn't take many sacks. So that's not even that relevant. My man ran for 8 yards in 15 games. If you take his entire Washington career, 28 games, he had 100 yards. So the knee surgeries and stuff have been one of the big problems, and it's why a lot of people have worried about him falling down the ranks. But I guess you can still go to the pro day and run what's being rumored as either, you know, a 4.46 or something faster than a 4.6, which still surprises me, Chris, because when you watch him play, he looks like the most one-dimensional pocket passer, clearly, of the group. Yes, he does a good job of not letting pressure dropbacks turn to sacks, but I almost wish he would have taken some sacks relative to the decisions he was making under pressure. Really bad habit of throwing off his back foot in the pocket. And again, we're talking about Bo Nix having a clean, you know, clean pockets and a lot of pass catchers out there. I'm pretty sure that Washington O-line won whatever that award is that Michigan usually wins for best offensive line in the country last year. And oh yeah, not one, not two, but probably three day one or day two wide receivers coming out of that Washington offense. So with that said, Chris, we're just looking at it potentially for the Raiders pass catchers in terms of who could be the best pure pocket passer in the year 2024, at least for the Raiders relative to the other options, man. I can get behind Penix over Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell.
Oh, hell yeah. Because if we're thinking just solely off of the, like just solely off of vibes, he's looking at like what the Raiders are trying to do. Like, have you heard some of like, Antonio Pierce's like his like press conference or whatever?
This dude is on a he, I want whatever he's smoking, I'll say.
Oh like, man, on. Like saying he's what like the gatekeeper or something like that. Like it's a little bit different, like with how they're running things out in Vegas, like for the Raiders right now. And I think a guy like Penix, I think he would fit into that. Like he would, like, especially if now seeing the mobility portion to it, adding that extra level of explosiveness to pair with Davante Adams and like Jacoby Myers and Trey Turner, like potentially. But like those are the guys that, but I think those are the guys that would potentially benefit from having him out there because yeah, I'm with you. Like his, like the accuracy in his decision-making is going to be something of a problem that they're going to need to work on. And if they already have like, I wouldn't say like the foundation is there, but if they needed to go with Aiden O'Connell or Gardner Minshew or toss somebody out there under center other than Penix like to start off, okay, fine. They have those options, and at least it signals to me that since they brought in a guy like Gardner Minshew, and it's not really like they're not rumored to be like really shopping in like the high end like quarterback market at this point. I haven't seen like a ton of teams being like connected to like, you know, like there's been some talk about like McCarthy, like going there, like and all that, but it hasn't been like as direct as some of the other guys. So if they're not really like being tied to some of these, like the higher end or like the top of this class, that at least gives me some indication that Pierce has like a longer runway, like than a lot of folks might think. Like his hot seat, like it's not going to be hot if they just come out and start losing games like immediately. Maybe so. But like for Penix, if he has that, if he were to go there, and he's working with Davante Adams, who we know is like one of the better wide receivers in the game. Jacoby Myers, like also like fairly solid. Then at least that would allow him, at least in terms of being able to develop like from that decision-making accuracy portion, like the part of his game that I think is where he's sorely lacking in. At the same time, being able to use his legs like when he needs to. Didn't have like a massive scramble rate, which to your point was probably like due to some of the injuries and knee concerns. So if like all that is now starting to come back for him, he's getting that mobility back. And then also, like, if that also, like, if he now gets to the next level and he's able to improve on the decision-making portion of it with having that wide receiver core in front of him, if he winds up going to the Raiders, they toss him out, let's say, in, I don't know, week 10, 11, 12, like, something towards the back end of the season when they've already been, well, let's assume they've been, like, smoked by the Chiefs and, like, and all that, and they're out of playoff contention. I will be starting, like, Penix probably on every single roster at that point because I want to see, like, that – like that fire, like from Pierce and like the rest of the crew, like while they're out there. Cause I think they're going to want to work with him as much as possible, especially after seeing this stuff from earlier today.
So you said it, we're not getting anything scrambling wise. So this is where with the measurables and everything, like, are they backing up what we're seeing on tape?
Yeah.
No, in this case, no, not at all. So is this some new untapped capability? I'd feel a lot better about it if my man's wasn't. Is he already 24? I know Bo is. If not, he's 23. He's
23 or about to turn 24, I thought, something like that.
Yeah, okay. I think he's turned 24 shortly after the draft. So at that point, it's just – and yes, the pressure to drop back rate. We've all seen it. Guys, we have more stats than just this under pressure. And this is what I'm talking about, where I almost wish he would have taken more sacks. Among these big six quarterbacks over the last two seasons under pressure, Penix, 6.9 yards per attempt, second worst. 39.2% completion rate, easily the worst. 12 touchdowns and 7 interceptions. Only May had more, but you know, May had 18 touchdowns going on to his credit with those 9 interceptions under pressure. So again, the Texas game was unbelievable. If he can play like he did against Texas each and every week at the NFL level, he is going to be a star. And guess what? You know, CJ Stroud, people said that about the Georgia game, and he's, guess what, able to do that. So I'm not ruling out that Penix can't, you know, go ahead and thrive and maybe play his best football, but it becomes so much harder to assume that's going to happen given the age. And then even, you know, if you want to go deeper into some of the potential knee problems down the road, it's tough, man. So I thought the Michigan game, even the Oregon games, you know, Oregon games were good. Michigan game was really rough, but that's a great defense out there. And even though like the Michigan State game, like this was one of the most fraudulent, like 300 plus yard, four touchdown games you're ever going to see. One of the touchdowns was literally like in the, like goes bad throw over the middle, middle linebacker deflects it, and then Polk somehow catches it and scoots his way into the end zone. He almost got like multiple wide receivers killed with bad ball placement on deep balls. But guess what? We got Adunze, Polk, and McMillan out there who all look freaking awesome. So out of all these guys that I've been watching recently, man, it was easily Washington the most, where I just had to keep rewinding it going like, what route did this wide receiver use to get that freaking wide open? Because they were the ones truly popping off the film each and every week. So, hey, when you have a game like Texas on your tape, and I understand Texas isn't exactly the best secondary in the world, but it was more than that. Because again, the numbers were Michigan State said it was an awesome game. It was not an awesome game. That Texas game, man, he was dropping dimes. The guys might have been open, but they were still, you know, being hit in stride. My comps, Southpaw Geno Smith, and that's – I don't think we're getting current 2024 Geno right out of the gate. So I do think there could be some development going on there. Byron Leftwich with an emphasis on the left. Sam Bradford without the stupid arm sleeves. Very poor man's Phillip Rivers. And yeah, man, overall, again, a poor man's Phillip Rivers could be pretty good. That's a Hall of Fame quarterback who started 15 plus years out here. But, you know, Chris, if we had to just go through it, do you think in 5 years that Michael Penix will be an above average NFL quarterback? Right now, I would say no.
Yeah, but he's probably just like right below that line. That's where right. I can see him at. Like, so if we're going to say like average is like top 16, top 17, 20th, like somewhere in there, I think that would probably be like the range I probably put him in. Like if he gets enough time to develop, then also has like a solid surrounding cast around him. Cause I'm not expecting Devontae Adams to be in the league like 5 years from now. But if he has a solid pass catching core around him, yeah, 19, 20, 21, like somewhere in there, I could see him getting to that point.
Fantastic stuff by you, Chris. Fantastic stuff by the listeners out there. Appreciate you guys tuning in as always. And also let us know, you know, in the comments what you think about these guys. Again, Chris and I are watching them, trying to develop our own opinions about them. What's the freaking point of not doing it? That said, you know, Chris, unlike everyone else we see on Twitter, you know, we are not actually former scouts. So I would like to thank guys like Nate Tice, Dane Brugler, Lance Zerloin. You know, I really do, especially in the profiles. I know, Chris, you do the same thing. Like, we are trying to use, again, our own eyes, but then also really just, you know, lean into some of the true experts in the industry, guys that are doing this, you know, 365 days of the year instead of 2 or 3 months here in the off season. But hope you guys got, again, a nice, you know, just relative look ahead on some quarterbacks that we are going to be seeing starting here in 2024 and quite possibly years and years in the future. So Chris, again, great job, my friend. Anything else you want to get off your chest?
No, nothing off my chest, man. I mean, we're going to be, you know, kicking it here in a few weeks. Yeah. I will say right now, if you live, I'm just going to open it up right now. If you live in the southwest part of Ohio, or you want to make the trek out and you want to play some cards, and come on, like, give me a shout. You know, we always want to, we take all comers, like when it comes to playing cards. So if you want to kick it with some of us, might have some people in town to come and hang out here in the Dayton area, give me a shout. But otherwise, man, I think it's the best time of the year for just sitting back and like just trying to evaluate these players, evaluate our processes, and just evaluate teams, because we've been going from free agency now into the draft. So getting a chance to sit back and actually taking a second to learn about these players and going through that process, I think, is one of my favorite times of the year. So I'm really excited to dive a bit more into these prospects. You've got guys that you're looking at. I've been taking a look at some running backs and wide receivers. Actually, my profile on Audric Estime should be out probably by the time folks see this, if it isn't out already. So, I mean, go ahead and check out the site. We'll have draft profiles up throughout the rest of this month and into April as the draft starts to heat up, and take a look and give us a shout and let us know what you think.
Amen to that. And yeah, maybe we'll just see you guys some of the perk again. This could go very wrong, Chris, but maybe it goes very right. Who the hell knows what could happen here? It's a great day. So for Chris, for producer James, I'm Ian. Thanks again for tuning in to the Fantasy Life Podcast. And until next time, take care. Goodbye.